PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week for the episode, not at the end of the episode, is Mr. Don Brown. He's the VP of Marketing and Innovation at True Temper. Don, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Yeah, I get, a full, I guess we'll see how long this goes as opposed to my usual, 15 to 30 second clip. I know you guys told me to make them a minute. I just talked too fast to ever stretch anything out that long.
Well, if anyone was paying attention to some of the last couple ones, you've dropped some pretty big doozies on us. You're making us question what's going on with potential down the road. I think you guys are having a fair bit of fun with them. It's been a really fun addition to the show because not only do we have guests on each week to talk about golf, we also have a nice little nugget, if you will, at the end where we get to have a separate conversation in a lot of times talking about product. Have you enjoyed this piece, this component of it? Do you like answering those questions or what's that like for you?
No, I mean, I think it's been great. I think, one thing that I've always enjoyed is, as time permits, is to jump into the forums and answer questions in there. But a lot of times I'm jumping into a product specific question. Somebody might post a question about Denali Frost, so I'm answering something specific to that. I think the fun thing about our segments has been they tend to be less product specific and more general questions about golf shafts and fittings and things like that. So those are always fun to jump into and answer. And, obviously you've got a very devoted group of golf equipment fanatics that are, sitting through an hour long podcast about golf equipment. So it's, fun to get questions from the people that, are interested in that are going to take that information to try to make their bag better.
Well, I sure love having it. I love the conversations that come from it as well. But you left us hanging last week, and I'm going to press early on this one because I know you guys are always working on something, right? There's no doubt. It's not like what you have in line is the only thing that you've talked about or looked at internally. You kind of messed with us a little bit when someone asked if there'd be Project X graphite iron shafts, and you just kind of stared at the camera and said, so come on, man. Like you got to be working on something. What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we are always working on something. When you have four different brands across, really three materials, if you steel, graphite, and then our steel fiber shafts, which are a mixture of both those materials. So we are always working on something. But yeah, we are looking at doing something new with some graphite irons that are Project X branded. Obviously, we've got some now. We've had them in the past. The Cypher irons, going back to the Catalyst irons. So taking the things we've learned from both, our history and some of our other brands, but also what some of our competitors are doing and trying to create a really solid graphite iron shaft product that spans the range from everybody that, is using a 40 or 50 gram shaft up into, into that 100 gram range. So it's something we are working on. It's also something that's very difficult to work on, especially when you talk about getting into constant weight taper tip, because then you're talking about having to do, if you're doing an RS and X, you're talking about eight different designs times three flexes. So that's 24 shaft designs you have to do, as opposed to if you're doing a parallel master shaft, new product, you're just doing one R, one S, one X, maybe one light. So it's, four designs. So doing a constant weight product is a very large undertaking from both a design standpoint, resource standpoint, and also really hard to design because, you can't use generally the same mandrel to make a 3-iron shaft that's 40 inches long as you do on a 36 and a half inch wedge shaft and have them be the same weight. So not only are you having to design 8 shafts, you're usually having to design 2, 3, maybe even 4 different mandrels to match the weights at each length and match the performance. So constant weight taper tip iron shafts are kind of the peak of the hardest thing any graphite golf shaft engineer has to design. And I'm glad I'm not the one designing them anymore. I'm just telling people what to design.
But it's almost like you make this sound challenging. I thought it was easy to do all this stuff. Like it just pops up in our feed and suddenly we have new toys to play with.
Constant weight graphite irons are hands down the hardest thing to design, which is why you don't see them come out as often as you do wood shafts and some other things. Cause it is, you know, if you were to look at the entire Denali Frost line, which includes black, blue, red across a wide variety of weights and flexes, a graphite iron shaft constant weight line is more designs than that for just one product line as opposed to kind of three different products. So,
wow. Well, the market has been a bit interesting from a over the last 10 or 15 or even 20 years from an adoption of graphite. I personally still stick with steel. I've had a pretty great relationship with Project XLS, and then I moved to LZ recently because I've been a bit more shallow, and just really promoting that launch has been super fun, but also promoting an unbelievable amount of feedback or feel, loading feel in my hands, which I've really enjoyed. But like, I know I'm different than quite a few because many people are moving into that graphite realm, and you guys certainly have options, but is that part of the press to look in that direction, knowing fully well that a lot of golfers are leaning that way, whether it's the perfect fit or not for them?
I mean, it's a little bit. I think, you know, sometimes where if I'm looking at it, graphite iron shaft, if somebody's looking for something 95 grams or higher, graphite would never be my first recommendation. Just the nature of the material means you're going to have more shaft to shaft inconsistency than you would with a steel shaft. Now, when you get to under 95 grams, there are just things we can't do at those lighter weights with steel that we can do with graphite. Graphite pound for pound is much stiffer and stronger than steel. So, you know, there are some 65 or 70 gram steel shafts out there, but they can only kind of only do one thing because you've got one material and there's only so much you can do with geometry. But generally, you know, if someone comes to me and is like, hey, I'm looking to do X, Y, or Z, and they want 100 plus gram shaft, I start them in steel usually. And then if there's a reason for graphite, either sometimes it's they don't like the vibration of steel, that tends to be one of them, then we'll look at something like either an Acro product or a steel fiber product. But more or less for me, if I'm starting somebody that's a stronger swinger or even kind of middle of the road in that 100 gram plus, I'm starting with steel first and then going to graphite as an alternate after that.
Well, I got more out of you than I thought I would talking about graphite iron shafts, but there's a bigger storyline going on right now for you guys, and it's something we're actually allowed to talk about in full depth, which is Titan. And you know, I went on socials to try and get a gauge on what people are saying about it, and I noticed a lot of the questions were, hey, what is this, why is this, is this the next version of this? And the feedback is pretty consistently that it's a new step, a new evolution, a new generation of conversation based purely almost reactionary to how golfers swing now at the highest speeds, the most aggression. I thought that was really interesting, and I'd love for you to start the conversation and explain where the idea for Titan came from and why it was necessary.
Yeah, I mean, it came from, we've seen some shift with some better players to softer product. You know, and it's not ours, but it's a very well-known graphite shaft that's been done very well on the PGA Tour with some of the best players in the world. And the X-Flex in that product, or the shaft being used on tour, was like 15 or 20 cycles softer than a hazardous S-Flex. So that, you know, was a very big swing from, say, where we were 5, 6, 7 years ago, whereas these guys are getting up to 185, 90 mile an hour ball speeds. They just wanted a telephone pole. And now kind of where some of the shift is you want telephone pole performance, but in softer feel. And so that's kind of what we've been trying to balance, is how do we make something that's not a telephone pole, but that can hold up to those faster swing speeds. It doesn't get wild. You know, you could probably go give some PGA Tour players a 40 gram ladies flex shaft, and when they square it up, it's going to go forever, but it's going to be too soft. It's going to feel squirrely and all of those things that would come along with that. So that's really what Titan was about. And our engineers developed a really new and unique EI profile. The handle is very soft, but then gets very stiff. There's a very sharp transition. And actually from about 12, 14 inches down, a Titan shaft is much stiffer than a hazardous shaft in the same flex or any of our other shafts in the same flex. But that handle section is much, much softer. So But you do that and then you get, oh, this feels whippy. I'm over, you know, I feel like I'm overpowering it. So we've developed a material technology we call Sinex that we wrap that soft handle with that prevents you from feeling like you're overpowering that shaft.
What? Respectfully, like that very interesting starting point, but excuse me, like how do you just convince people or produce that feeling without it being that feeling?
It's about what hoop stiffness, and there's probably other people out there that are saying a similar story, talking about hoop strength. And as we've discussed many times, that is my number one pet peeve, is people in golf marketing space confusing stiffness and strength. Hoop strength would just means if I accidentally stood on the golf shaft, it wouldn't break. Hoop stiffness is about if I stand on the golf shaft, how long it stays round. And so we have found that there is a very strong correlation between hoop stiffness and perceived feel with a graphite wood shaft. So some of this came from as we were working on our Gen 5 T1100 hazardous product. It was actually about 10 or 15 cycles stiffer than the original T1100 that we had launched almost 10 years ago. And to a man, every single player said, this is softer than my original T1100. This feels softer. The numbers were, you know, lower launch, lower spin, but every single one was like, this feels softer. So we went and looked at it. We're like, man, the EI profile stiffer, the frequency stiffer, the torque is lower. All the things that we think would make a shaft feel stiffer were the case. And we realized that the hoop stiffness in the Gen 5 was much softer than in the original one. And so that's kind of what bore out this new Sinex technology, is okay, there is something in the hoop stiffness of the shaft to make a softer shaft feel stiffer than it actually is, or make a very stiff shaft feel soft if it lacks that hoop stiffness.
Wow. So when it comes to this new type of technology, and I feel like you have to be fairly careful about how you apply it and what you apply it to, but When you have, and this is one of my favorite conversations, because I know it's, there's a constant exploration of what we can introduce that's different, that sort of resets the game. And so when it comes to other technologies, or maybe not technologies, other shaft profiles and designs, how quickly does that Sinex, for example, get incorporated into some of those?
So yeah, so it's obviously it's in Titan right now, and the learnings we have from that, whether or not it's Sinex or another kind of hoop stabilizing technology that we maybe put into our other product lines, is something that now we just know it's something we got to focus on. You know, a couple of years ago, we would have said, okay, the EI profile is good, the frequency is good, the torque is good, this product is ready to go. And now we know that there's this kind of third arm of that, you know, what I would call maybe like, you know, stability in the golf shaft, which is torque, stiffness. Before, we just looked at that. Now that we're starting to look at a lot more about the hoop stiffness, that really is now this third thing we have to look at when we're designing a shaft. And you could certainly overdo it. If you loaded up a shaft that was supposed to be soft for a senior or a slower swing speed with a bunch of Sinex type technology, it's going to make that shaft feel too stiff to that person. So it is definitely a balancing act.
Wow. Interesting. So in a lot of ways, are you allowing the swing profile to convince golfers otherwise? Do you know what I'm asking there?
Well, I think in some cases, like, we'd be better off not telling the golfer anything about the profile before they swung it and hit it. Because if we went to some people that and said, hey, this has got a really soft butt section, they're automatically be like, no, I like something that's super stiff in the handle. But if we just let them swing it, they might not feel like it's soft, and we would, you know, they might get the benefit of the softer handle we're using in Titan. We've seen a pretty consistent jump in ball speed against both our products and competitor product that's out there. And so if you told somebody up front, like, hey, this has got a really soft handle, they might not even pick it up because they, in their mind, think they don't need a soft handle product or want a soft handle product. But if you just let them swing it, and then they see the ball speed increase and they're like, wow, this is great. And then you tell them it's a soft handle, then they don't care. So it could be an instance of where the golfer knows too much before they swing it and get some preconceived notions that they might be like, no, this isn't for me. And if they just swung it first, they'd be like, wow, this thing is fantastic. So
when Denali first came out, THPers had a chance to go and blind test it, didn't know anything about it. It was just a black shaft you guys had created for us. And it was a lot of fun to get reactions and get, you know, no preconceived perspective other than we knew it was a Project X shaft. Did you do a lot of that with Titan? Did you explore how golfers reacted to it?
I mean, especially on tour. There's Titan, you know, we launched Titan, officially launched it on tour the week of Torrey Pines. There have been a few pieces out, you know, in Hawaii and over in Palm Springs, but the official, you know, embargo date end and all those kind of good things this marketing guys talk about was the week of Torrey Pines. We had Titans in play before the FedEx Cup last year, but they weren't labeled as Titans. They were out on tour in just all black paint because we've been doing testing for a long time. And sometimes with tour players, they test it and then they're like, well, I'm going to keep this. And we're like, so we take them out black because we're not ready to unveil the name yet, or we don't have the graphics done. So there were definitely, you know, guys won PGA Tour events using Titan through the back half of 2025 that nobody knew was going to be called Titan.
Interesting. Is that a challenge for you when you know that a player has your product in play and it's very successful with them, but you can't really explore it and celebrate it? I know there's a challenge being that if you don't have guys under contract, you can't really say their name anyway. I don't care, but you can't. But yeah, you know, a lot of times that having that signage, having that reference point on the shaft to allow people to see it is kind of a big deal. I think that's why Hazardous is so cool and popular, because it's a very visual thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, there are probably times when we would rather, we'd maybe be like, hey, we, you know, this is just a prototype. It doesn't have graphics. We want to get the marketing buzz, but we also don't want to tell a player, hey, you got to wait 5 months to take this. And by then they've gotten comfortable with a different golf shaft and you lose that opportunity. There's also certainly a ton of buzz that happens around prototypes. If there's a player out there and it's like, man, what's that shaft he's playing that's just black and says X720A-46PTX on it? It's like, and it says Project X, people start talking about what is this prototype? What's it going to be? And it kind of builds a little bit of hype. And then, you know, the Titan prototypes that guys were playing that didn't say Titan on them had that pattern, graphical pattern that we have on the butt end. We're still on those. So people are then able to tie back and go like, oh, that prototype so-and-so has been playing for 5 months was a Titan, just didn't say Titan on there. So there's definitely some marketing buzz. The thing we run into is if it's too early, because you get that initial pop of like, everyone's like, oh, you know, what is this new thing? What's this cool new thing? And then they got to wait 5 or 6 months to try it. Golfers, you know, everybody these days has a very short attention span. Golfers on golf equipment might even be shorter. And so they kind of forget about the thing they were excited about in August if you don't get it out there till February. So that's the bigger concern for us, is if something's, you know, gets hot and people get some buzz behind it, but then we're not ready to launch it to the market for 6 months, sometimes we lose that initial pop.
Let me ask you a really petty, stupid question as it relates to golfers. Do you think that players or people like the fully black shaft more than just having, let's say, a Project X logo on it?
I think there's people out there that definitely like having something that nobody else has is something they want to have. I mean, it's not just golfers. I mean, you know, not my thing, but look at how many people sit there and mash their phone trying to get whatever limited Jordan drop comes out, like they're trying to get Taylor Swift tickets, you know, and it's all those things now. And that's just, you know, something that's becoming more and more popular, I think, all across consumer goods, is wanting the limited edition, wanting the one of 100, wanting something that nobody else has. So there certainly is some of that, you know, people, and you'll see them on eBay's, you know, we take out a prototype shaft and it slips off a tour truck, or a player takes it home and decides that's not for him and he gives it to his caddy. And then his caddy decides he'd rather have the $700 he can get from selling a prototype shaft than having a prototype shaft, and it ends up on eBay and somebody will buy it even if they don't know it's the right shaft for them, because they have no idea what it is. It just says X720 on it. Mm-hmm. There's no other information. But yeah, I definitely think there's golfers that want to have something nobody else has, or very few other people have, just because it's something to brag about.
Yeah, I noticed you said the Jordan thing wasn't for you, but you also mentioned Taylor Swift. Is that like more your lane, or?
Yeah, I'm definitely, you know, 50-year-old guy with a shaved head, definitely going to see me rocking out at some Taylor Swift shows.
Oh man, yeah, it's been really interesting seeing the reaction on Titan, and it's fun for me as a consumer, because you know, I'm pretty comfortable in yellow, hazardous yellow. In fact, I got pretty cranky about, you know, a handful of years ago when it shifted, and I hoarded the OGs like there was, you know, something different and special. And now I have the new one, which is pretty fantastic. But, you know, always that opportunity and that experience to chase other and consider what's possible. But then you have these new technologies that sort of unravel and you start to wonder, well, you know, maybe. Maybe that's more for me. So what do you say to the folks who already have a pretty established product, especially something from Project X in their bag, and they see something like Titan come out? Well, how do you convince them, like, maybe this isn't for you, or maybe this is for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it just comes down to, you know, now there's so many opportunities for people to go out and test shafts. It, you know, so many people know their numbers now. I mean, you know, like, just, you know, since the PGA show, I think I've seen somebody's got a $300 launch monitor that gives you the very basics, ball speeds and stuff like that. But now I know somebody's just now starting pre-sale on a $500 launch monitor that gives you spin, peak height, all the kind of information you might have previously only found in a $8,000 launch monitor. And whether or not it's accurate to the same percentage, maybe not, but if it's still giving you a pretty good ballpark on where that is, I think now there's enough of that out there that you may be like, no, I'm a hazardous black guy and I don't want to try a different EI profile. Well, you can probably mosey on down to your local, you know, large golf retailer, and Titan's going to be stock in a couple products that are coming out, and take it on their launch monitor and hit it a few times, and you know what your numbers are on your driver at home, and say like, oh, well, look at that. I picked up a mile and a half hour of ball speed and my spin number is the same. So I may have not have thought the shaft was for me, but it's hard to argue with the numbers. So
The whole shift from golfers to what does it look like to what are the numbers has been pretty interesting to me. There are definitely numbers I'm looking for, but it's more like path and approach than it is the actual numbers on the results of the shot. I have a pretty good idea what, where, and why when it comes to it. But for me, the selling point is usually how it flies in the air and how it falls to the ground, especially in something like driver. You have these guys who get deeply, deeply immersed in the numbers now. Is that, do you look at that as a good thing or a more of a challenge for you?
I think it is a good thing up until a point where you get to paralysis by analysis and you get the people are freaking, you know, trying to dial in 200 RPM of spin when if you give them 10 swings, their spin variation is 1200, 1500, where it's like, okay, you're not accurate enough to dial into 200 RPM. So let's not worry about getting this thing that dialed. I think the most interesting thing for me when you look at people, you know, you talked about what their perception is of what kind of window or ball flight they want to see versus what's actually optimum. Most golfers, I think, especially with a driver, want to see their ball in a window that is lower than what's optimum for them. I think, you know, they're like, oh no, that I hit that way too high. It's like, no, actually, you know, 16 degrees and 2000 RPM is perfect for you. If you want to launch it at 9.5 or 10, that ball's on the ground too soon and you're losing distance because you're not carrying it as far as you want to. I think that's the biggest thing that most people have misconceptions about is just what their brain thinks is the appropriate launch window and what math would tell them is actually the appropriate launch window.
There may be some of these launch monitors at the stores need to come with ghosts attached to them that show the optimal flight by comparison to theirs, you know, like the old Mario Kart.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that would be a fantastic thing is if, you know, it is like the old Mario Kart, you know, or, you know, even when they show the putts on TV where it's like, here's the line and here's where his ball's actually tracking is if, and, you know, certainly we're getting close to that point. The technology's fast enough where it could take your club head speed and as you swing and be like, oh, for your club head speed, your optimum launch is 16 and 2200 and here's where the ball would land. And you launch that at 9.5 and 3100 and here's where your ball landed and here's where everything rolled out to. I think that would be very beneficial to a lot of golfers.
Yeah. Well, tell me about how your day-to-day is shifting now, because through the big early year madness, and now what's next big steps for you personally?
Yeah, you know, it's the way now the equipment cycle works. We were actually pitching the 2027 product before the PGA show even happened.
Okay.
So some of that is just the way the global supply chain works. You know, if you want to have product in a warehouse in the US in November to have a retailer's in January, if you don't want to ship that product air, it's got to get on the water in like July or August, which means you've got to make shaft decisions and start making heads and doing all those things in December of the previous year. So that the development time frame for us of when decisions are being made and when we have to have new products ready is now over a year out from when the product will launch, which means we are pitching new product before the previous generation has even been launched. So we were already, Denali, for example, we were working on and pitching Denali Frost to people before the first Denali even ever hit retail.
Wow. Wow. So, okay. So you said you got a big trip coming up?
Yeah, I'm headed over to Japan and then over to Korea to work with our kind of sales and marketing teams over there, go visit with our OEM partners over there. You know, each of those markets kind of has a different mindset on what kind of shafts they want to use in their market, what their customers want to see. So it's really important to get over there and, you know, go talk to those, to the people in those markets. You know, Japan and Korea are two of the largest golf markets in the world outside of, you know, the US. And then if you take Europe as a whole, but obviously, you know, EU as a whole encompasses a lot of countries. If you just look at individual countries, Japan and Korea are both, you know, are probably three and four in the world in terms of their market size. So it's a very important market for us.
Are you having the same kinds of conversations over there that you would over here?
Yeah, I mean, they're a little bit different. The, you know, those like the Japan market is not as big into the kind of limited edition things that we're seeing grow over here, where a lot of the retailers are starting to do these limited edition drops of, oh, we're going to make 2,000 of a USA themed wedge, and then we're going to do a black themed set and some of these other things we see. See a little bit of that in Japan, not a ton. Korea, on the other hand, everybody there, you talk about the Jordan thing, everybody there wants to have, you know, something that nobody else has, and they want the super premium. You know, they're spending $100 on a glove because it's got some bedazzle logo on there that nobody else has. So they're very different markets. They're both, you know, they're fun markets to work in, but they definitely have their idiosyncrasies, you know, whereas here in the US, kind of the whole, you know, even on the shafts where, you know, usually consumers, if they see the OEM clubhead manufacturer's name on the golf shaft, that's a bad thing. In Japan, that's mandatory. Doesn't matter if it's a real deal, exactly the same shaft that you would buy, you know, standalone. The consumers there want the OEM club manufacturer name on that shaft, which is exactly the opposite of the kind of what the market desires here. It's a just a totally different mindset there.
That's very interesting. Is there a reason for that?
I think there's just they feel like that if the clubhead manufacturer is involved in the shaft, that lends more authenticity to the total club performance there than here, where people are more focused on, I want a individual shaft fit into this head. You know, the custom fitting in Japan is not nearly as big as it is here. Some of that is literally just, it comes down to pricing. You know, here in the US we have MAP, or minimum advertised price. And so if you go to store A and they're like, okay, here's a driver with a Titan Black, and that's going to cost you $700. If you look on your phone, no one else is going to have it for less than $700, because the minimum advertised price rule for that driver is $700. Well, in Japan, that minimum advertised price is illegal. So if you go into store A and they quote you $700 for a driver, the guy down the street may have it on his website for $600. And so you're going to go buy it there. And so they get nervous about custom club fitting, because you go in and you get, you know, custom fit into a Acra shaft in a driver head there, and you get quoted $950, but they have to order the shaft, they have to build the club. Well, while you're waiting for them to order and build it, if you find the guy down the street has it for $850, you're going to call and cancel your order for $950 and buy it from somebody else at $850. So there's just a lot less custom club fitting that happens over there than there is over here, where, you know, there's every major city that you've got probably five or six options of places where you can go in and get custom fit. In Japan, it's a lot of, you go in and you hit whatever shafts are available in the fitting cart right there and available for purchase that day, is kind of the retail mindset there.
Interesting. That's, yeah, totally different. Like there's almost like a level of expectation here that you have something sort of unique, regardless of whether the OEMs and the shaft partners agree it's a good fit or not, which is pretty funny to me. That's very different. Is it the same kind of concept on iron shafts? Do they have a predictable model over there that's similar to here, or is it a little bit different?
Over there, generally, everything's on the lighter side. So here, where you'll see, you know, depending on the heads, you'll see anything from a 85 or a 95 up to a, you know, a Dynamic Gold at 132. Dynamic Gold and the other 130 gram product there only really exists like in the blade style product, in the very, very good player product. But then it's a pretty quick drop off. They don't go to like 115 or 125 and then to 115. It's like you're either in the 95 gram weight range or you're playing a Dynamic Gold 130 gram and a blade. They don't have as many kind of midweight options there.
It almost sounds like US is a little bit needy. I can't believe that.
Well, I think it's just some of it is just different here. There, you know, the biggest difference between Japan, Korea, and the US is in the US, the PGA Tour and the, you know, that and DP World Tour to an extent kind of dominate what people are, where people are taking their equipment cues from. You know, you're going to watch what Scotty or Rory or these guys are playing, and that's going to drive kind of your influence on what you should be playing. In Japan and Korea, they, I will say, are self-aware enough to realize that they are not as strong as the men on the Japan or Korea men's tour, that their game is more similar to the women's tour there. And so the JLPGA and KOPGA is what drives a lot of the equipment influence in those two countries. And on those tours, you see lightweight steel or a lot of steel fiber. So like steel fiber for us in Japan and Korea is huge. I mean, it is bigger. You know, obviously, the American market is much bigger than those two markets, but we sell more steel fiber in Japan and Korea combined than we do in the US.
Wow. I have two more sort of focus pieces today because you mentioned the limited edition stuff. Funny enough, you joked about how they're not that worried about it. And one of the most recent posts on Project X Instagram is Valentine's Day wedge shafts. Oh, yeah. And, you know, winning those. And it's always incredibly fun to see the limited edition stuff. And in our case, that is that like true rare item that people might not have, but it also is the exact product you're looking for. And it doesn't really stop at shafts. I mean, you're wearing a sick looking hoodie today with yeah, Titan branding on there, which is pretty cool. One of my favorite hoodies is a True Temper one I got while I was doing the Denali event. So, you know, there is a level of joy and fun about having something different from your favorite shaft brand. And I assume that's not slowing down for you guys, at least over here. Do you guys have a pretty interesting roadmap for 2026 already?
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of limited edition stuff. We have a lot of our partners are doing that. You know, there's the kind of limited edition wedge thing has exploded. Most of the OEMs now are doing a few limited edition releases every year. One of the things we're going to do is we're actually got a new website that'll be launching probably around April 1st. And we'll have some of those shafts that are available in the OEM limited edition. We'll be selling those shafts as standalone wedge shafts. So this being the 250th anniversary of the birth of the United States, there's a lot of USA themed stuff coming this year. And we are the stock wedge shafts in those limited edition things. One thing that's different is now we're actually going to sell those shafts standalone ourselves on our website. And we're looking to do more of that. Obviously, you know, you look at the success that BB Farrell and Co. have, where people are going out and buying these, you know, cool one-off Farrells, and they're dressing their, you know, their clubs up that way. And it's just this level of personalization that people want to have. So we definitely want to see how we can support that from the shaft side of the business, you know, to start with limited edition, but, you know, potentially down the road, get into opportunities to customize golf shafts. We already have that with Acura, where you can go pick whatever color you want and change your logo colors and all that. And that's something we're looking to expand to some of our other product lines.
So I assume something like that, would that be a build on demand type of thing? Or would that be you'd have a bunch pre-built and have to deal with a lot of inventory?
I think it's probably a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. I think you can start with, okay, we're going to make 200 of this particular colorway and 200 of that colorway. The ultimate goal is to get to where you kind of can do it on demand, but that is, you know, just the efficiencies of having to paint one Dynamic Gold purple and then paint one Dynamic Gold white and then paint another one gold, just in terms of like mixing paints and things of that nature. There's a lot of inefficiency there that can certainly be overcome. It's just, hey, is the consumer going to be willing to pay an extra $25? Cause we had to mix $25 worth of paint to paint one shaft. And then the rest of the paint went in the hazardous waste bin. That's kind of what we got to figure out, is how we can do that in a manner where we don't end up having to, you know, charge $300 for a one-off Dynamic Gold wet shaft to cover all the inefficiencies in the process. So that's one of the things we're working on.
Gotcha. Just waiting for like the splatter series to come out. So instead of just dumping it, you just splatter it on a bunch of shafts and release those instead, you know?
Yeah. Like I said, you know, that's something, you know, we definitely will see from us more this year, starting as the limited edition, you know, hey, we made 50 of each of these, you know, Denalis in this colorway, and they'll be available on our website through some of our partners. And then when they're gone, they're gone, and we'll do another drop after that. So that's definitely something we want to lean into. It's funny, there's some of those things that, you know, do really well, and we always have debates around, you know, the Valentine shaft or at Christmas time, like, yeah, you know, a hazardous with a Christmas wreath on it is cool for about a 3-week span of the year, but do you want to be the guy rocking a hazardous shaft with a Christmas wreath on it in July? Maybe not. So that's why I think we're more of like limited edition colorways as opposed to holiday specific items become something. So
yeah, I mean, I've got a couple head covers I use depending on season, and I'm glad I could take them off and bring them back out each year. I'm not so sure I want an ugly Christmas sweater on my wedge shaft in the middle of July.
Exactly. So that's one of the things we, you know, with some of the giveaways we've done, where people have actually had people win, you know, some, you know, an ugly Christmas sweater or something, and they'll be like, hey, that's cool, but can I just get the regular one? Because I don't want to play an ugly Christmas sweater driver shaft in July. So
really,
that's definitely, as we're looking at it, something, you know, we want to be aware of. You know, in the giveaways, it's you get what you get. But when we talk about from a retail standpoint and being able to sell product, if it's too seasonal or too niche, you know, it makes it to where people may be like, yeah, I don't need an Easter bunny hopping up and down my wedge shaft in August. So.
Is there a time of year you'd want an Easter bunny jumping around your golf shaft?
No, probably not. I actually joked. I was like, those Valentine's Project X wedge shafts had a little bit of Easter, you know, flair to them as well with all the pastels. I was like, oh, we can just repurpose these in a couple of months for Easter. So
that's great. I want to talk a little bit about material. Not a ton, and I'm sure we can address this another time, but you have this new Sinex concept going into Titan, and my assumption is that you're constantly exploring different ways to go about producing shafts or using different materials. Has there been a notable shift at all in that over the last couple of years, or are you continuously exploring different types of things like that to try and really make a more robust product?
Yeah, we definitely were always, you know, trying out the new, you know, there's someone's always launching a new carbon fiber. You know, Toray, for example, started out it was T800 and then T1000 and then T1100. Now there's a T1200 that they have out. So we're always testing those materials, but a lot of times it's not just, hey, T1200 is cool. It is, how can we implement T1200 into a golf shaft to make the golf shaft perform better? So, you know, I'm in one of the rare guys in this industry that wears both the marketing hat and the engineering hat at the same time. So, my marketing hat might be like, who cares if it does anything? I want to just be able to say in a press release that I'm using T1200. But then my engineering brain says, well, actually getting anything out of using this, you know, new fiber. So I think a lot of what we focus on is less about what the new materials are, but more about how we implement those materials or how we implement other materials. You know, people talk a lot about either 90 ton or 125 or 130 MSI carbon fiber, super stiff. And it's very sexy to talk about, but if you were to build a golf shaft out of entirely one of those materials, it would be unbelievably low torque, unbelievably stiff, and it would break the first time your grandmother swung it because those materials are super brittle. So it's, you know, that's comes to the thing, okay, can we actually utilize this material in a way that makes the golf shaft better, or are we just using it for the sake of saying we're using it?
Interesting. So exploring it, but being careful on how it's applied. I think that makes a lot of sense. And
I try to do, and this goes even, you know, back to my engineering days, is I try for it to be a genuine application of the material, not a pixie dust application. You know, there was a lot of stuff, you know, 5-10 years ago about carbon nanotubes and then graphene and all these kind of things. And a lot of those, I call them pixie dust applications, because it's like, we're going to, you know, graphene at the time was $2 million a pound. So how much of that do you think they're actually putting into a golf shaft? It's just like, yeah. you kind of blow some onto a golf shaft and say activated by graphene. And it's like, well, you didn't actually make the golf shaft any different. You've just sprinkled it on there for the sake of a marketing pitch. And, you know, one of the things I try to do wearing both hats at True Temper is make sure that whatever we're doing from a, you know, material standpoint is a genuine implementation of that material, not just doing it for the sake of a marketing claim.
Hmm. I want to give you the last laugh here, or last comment, since you seem to enjoy it a little bit at the end of every episode. Is there one question? So for clarity on everyone, Don does an episode. It's called Shaft University or Shaft Education. And he answers a question from someone in the community. We actually just had a thread on THP on the forums where you had the opportunity to ask Don your questions, and we curated a few of those to make sure they had some great questions to answer for us in future episodes. But in this case, Don, I'm curious, is there one question you wish people would ask more of when it comes to chefs?
No, I mean, I think, you know, one of the big ones is the material thing we just talked about is, you know, I think people get caught up in the hype of somebody talking about 90 ton or 135 MSI or some of these other new materials that are out. And I guess the question would be is like, not, oh, cool, what is this new material? It's, hey, how does this material make my golf shaft better? And so if you're, you know, if you're taking it from a 10,000 foot view and someone's talking about using a 95 ton fiber, but then you look at the torque and it's the same 3.2 degrees of torque that another company that's not talking about using 95 ton fiber and is, how are they using that material? How are they making it better? So I think that's the important thing is always it's not the material, it's how the material is implemented. You know, by and large, myself and most of my graphite competitors, we're all using the same ingredients. It's the recipe that makes the dish. And so that's kind of the analogy I like to use is, you know, have two restaurants right next door to each other getting their ingredients delivered from the same ingredient company. It's how they put those ingredients together that makes the restaurant good. And so I think that's what you have to ask yourself is how are these shaft companies implementing these materials, not just the fact that they're using them.
So if you had, you know, kind of like the angel and devil on each shoulder kind of concept. If you had marketing,
mine's probably two devils, but yeah, the more evil and less evil.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about marketing Don on one shoulder and engineering Don on the other shoulder. Who usually wins that argument?
Usually engineering Don. You know, I'm actually coming up here. My 25 year True Temper anniversary will be in March. And I was an engineer for 21 of those years. So that guy's got a little bit more experience. You know, the marketing guy, yeah, he wins some of them, but that's usually he's, you know, more fighting battles about what color should we make the Titan logo and those kind of things. But in terms of telling the genuine story, the engineering guy usually wins. But I always try to take advantage of it around the office. And when someone asks a hard engineering question, I just say, oh, I'm just the marketing guy. And when someone has a marketing question I don't want to answer, I just say, I'm just the engineering guy. So it's kind of nice wearing both hats because I can choose when I want to wear them.
I love it. Well, it's always fun to have you on for a full episode, to have a real chat. Sounds like Titan's incredibly interesting. And I'll ask you the selfish individual question. I'm a big fan of hazardous yellow, man. Should I spend much time emotionally investing in Titan, or should I just keep the steady with the course that I've got going?
I would say if you were like, you know, you generally like a yellow profile, something that's a little counterbalanced, but still low spin, there may be another Titan coming that you might want to keep some powder dry for.
Okay. Well, you know what? There goes the rest of my year in mental space. So thanks a lot, Marketing Don. Appreciate that.
No problem.
Hey, if you guys are golfing this weekend, have fun. Go check out the new Titan product from Project X. It looks really interesting. Great new concept and design in there. And Don, enjoy your Asian trip. Looking forward to having you back. See you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.